South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail? A sitting president sleeping on cash, literally. A cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail. Or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do.
Can you confirm that delivery performances drop?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. Today, South Africa marks 29 years of freedom. But we almost did not get there. The events of Saturday, 11 April 1993. I had a hangover, by the way, that morning. I remember when I heard it on the radio, I had a hangover. I was somewhere in the Western Cape. The killing of high-profile ANC leader and SACP General Secretary Chris Hani by a Polish immigrant, Janusz Walusz. I try not to pronounce this guy's name properly. I mean, he wouldn't pronounce mine anyway well. It nearly derailed the negotiations between the ruling National Party and the Liberation Movement. Actually, mainly the ANC, let's be honest. 4 days after the killing of Hani, a high-level National Party government and security meeting was held. And that basically was the genesis of what today we call the new South Africa. Well, that's not according to me. I'm not that smart. I believe the new South Africa was born when Orlando Pirates beat Kaizer Chiefs on that fateful 1988 Bob Safe Cup match. You remember that match? Very important. But veteran journalist Justice Malala, who I can almost falsely claim is a friend of mine, is the man who spread in this room. In his new book, The Plot to Save South Africa, Malala traces the days after Hani's killing and how that led to an agreement between the Nets and the ANC to finally have an election a year later. To mark Freedom Day, I thought it would be cool to catch up with Justice Malala and talk about this touch-and-go moment. He's speaking to me from go overseas, like he's in America. Well,
it's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's been a minute, brother. Have you made peace with the Taliban since they shot you?
I haven't made peace. I haven't made much peace with anyone. But I see where you're going, Rams, you know, and we're going to have a fight about Kaizer Chiefs on Orlando Pirates. We're going to have a fight about hangovers. We're going to have a fight about with the history of our country. You and I look like we're going to have lots of fights. But
okay, we're not going to have a fight, but I need to ask you this question. Do you still believe that girls, children should go to school?
Absolutely, absolutely they should.
So the Taliban sought you.
I think they should go to school. I think everyone should go to school, Rams, you know. It's so funny that you're asking about Malala and the Taliban. You know, when you Google, for many, many years, I knew that I was, you know, I was the only Malala.
You're the only Malala, right?
I was the only Malala. Even in my family, they started realizing that, no, you know what? Bumutswala, bumamma, no. The Malala ke Malala.
Yeah.
Go and Google, there is it. This young woman comes along, and now you Google Malala. You know, it's heartbreaking. You Google
not even
Malala.
On page one, my friend. You're not even on page one.
It's like, what is going on here? So she's taken over my life. You put Malala, it starts with her, it doesn't start with me. You have to put in Malala book, the French South Africa. You have to work at this thing now.
It's worse. Even when you put Justice Malala, they think about justice for her. You know, like...
No. My life is ruined. It's over.
I'm so sorry, my brother. But it probably helps that you're no longer here. But look, man, your book is too long. And, you know, you gave me a few days to read it. Now I'm not that way inclined. But why should I finish this book? Why is it important?
You know, Ramsey, you should finish this book. You should start it. That would be a good thing.
Started already.
That's fantastic. So the key thing is to find out it's also, for me, there's a whole bunch of things. We'll talk about them. But the key one is this. I, like you, I remember where I was. And you also remember you had a hangover this morning, and then the news comes through on the radio through friends or whatever. And so everyone can remember where they were. The old geezers can remember where they were on that day. And it's a memory. It's so sharp in everyone's mind, they can tell you. Nelson Mandela is in Kunu. You know, he's taken time off for Easter holidays. F.W. de Klerk is in the Karoo somewhere at his grandmother's farm, taking time off. If lots and lots of people can remember this.
F.W. was in that farm, but I'm sure he was wearing a wire, listening to, as it happened, done. Well,
talk about the conspiracies. So the key thing for me is then what happens, and I think many of us. So I'll tell you about myself. When I first said I'm going to write this book, it was going to be a book about 24 hours after Chris Anu was murdered. Because the history is that Nelson Mandela went on television that night and gave the speech of his life, and peace was restored to the country immediately afterwards. But actually, and this is why you should keep on with the book. I show that Nelson Mandela did pitch up for a speech that evening. The speech was a dud. It was an absolute total. It didn't work. He arrived at the SABC late at night after 10 p.m. He went on. He couldn't see the teleprompter properly. He read it.
The teleprompter.
So I'd say that again.
The first time he was looking at a teleprompter.
Probably. The speech had been written for him. He'd only read it in the car from the airport to the studios. It wasn't a great speech. People were asleep by the time he went on television. So actually, many people didn't see it. It didn't stop the violence that was flaring. It didn't stop the riots. And so this crisis goes into day two, day three. Only in day three does he actually give the speech that everyone remembers, that people say this is the amazing speech and so on. So I'm asking you to read this book, and for your listeners, it's The Plot to Save South Africa, okay? And I'm asking you to read this book because then much more happens, and you see how close we came to this blow-up and how and what happened to pull us back. And for me, I wrote it mainly to say, you know, you and I are big current affairs people. We talk about Jacob Zuma, Cyril Ramaphosa, pala pala, blah blah blah, all these things. I wanted to remind all of us to remember a time when leadership mattered, when leaders pushed forward, when leaders knew what they were aiming for, and actually went for it.
Is that a slide on the Joburg mayor or something?
I would never slide to the Joburg mayor. You know, I just think he met some people. He got a commitment to a loan, and they told him that you don't have to pay it back. He said yes. I mean, this guy, where is he from? I understand he says he's from Soweto. A guy from Soweto doesn't see a Mashonisa when he meets one. He doesn't recognize him.
How long you have to solve this matter very quickly? He's from Protea, Glenn. That's not Soweto. But that's...
Don't deny your people. Don't deny your people, my brother.
72 hours after the death of this man. But we end up with so much content about what happened 72 hours later, the 14th of April, this meeting.
The meeting at the Union Buildings is incredible. It's incredible for several reasons. You know, people and our listeners don't always remember that, and this is something that I think we should revisit as a country. Everything that happens, whether it's cabinet and so forth, it's recorded and it's put away, and after some time the you know, you can access those records and say, oh, Mandela actually said, or so and so said in this meeting, da, da, da. The apartheid government, in the year before 1994, a cabinet said, we need to destroy records of what we did. And so from Pretoria, thousands and thousands of files were put on trucks, transported to those of you who don't remember, we used to have, we used to be a major steel-making country. We had furnaces. We had, it was called Iskor if you lived in Pretoria. And if you worked at Iskor, you know, the Iron and Steel Corporation of South Africa, it made all sorts of things, but it had this massive, massive furnaces. So imagine in your head that all these files about spies, files about who they were snooping on, files about who was telling on who, all kinds of incredible, incredible stuff. They load them up and take them to the furnaces at Iskor in Pretoria, and they just burn hundreds and millions of files, and our history is just boom, gone. So we wouldn't.
And before you answer me,
sorry, I lost your question there.
Why is that strange? I mean, before you answer me, can't you remove files of your ex before you meet your new one?
No. Look, it's strange and not strange, but the key thing is that our children, history needs to be told, and you and I are going to move on and pass on. But someone will say one day, there was a really, really funny guy, a guy who did politics in a way that was different to any other commentator, any other host, and that was Rams Mabote. I want to write a book about them. You'll be gone and da-da-da. Now, what do you think is embarrassing now that, you know, oh, no, I don't want my current to know about my ex? By then, it will just be history. And so history is beautiful when it's told in all in its entirety. And why is it that we don't get the same chance as a country? The thing about archiving stuff is that in 50 years, someone, when they sit down and say, I'm going to write a book about Rems, they just need to have access to everything. So this conversation between you and me, it might actually be the conversation that says, you know, Rems, you might think that he's laughing at justice, but he's crying with him because they both think, whoa, what have we done with this country? And it's people their age. I mean, these guys, they were around when the country got free. What did they do in 29 years? All they did was talk yak, 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 or right, yak, yak. So for me, that moment is absolutely key in that we needed to keep those files to know. So in writing my book, I went and tried to find some of those files. I couldn't, but I managed to get one small document, top secret, and it gives you an idea of who was in the room. It gives you, it's
hold on, top secret. Hold on right there. Hold on. Before you tell me about this top secret document, I need to justify why I agree with the burning of stuff. I mean, look at the Nazis. They didn't burn their stuff. And what happened for the next 40 years, the Jews started hunting them and they found all of these guys wherever they were hiding. So then that's nothing about because we don't know anything about them. They're still alive. You see, they're smart somewhere there.
Yes, well, it depends on what you think. What do you mean by smart? They certainly, look, I mean, South Africa needs to, I think, confront the fact that our truth and reconciliation was not fully truthful, was too much reconciliation with something that we didn't know. You know, Rams, if you go back to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and you and I were on the staff of the Star at the time, and you think about what happened. I remember, I'm an old man now, but I vaguely remember a conversation with you about Every day there's someone arriving, a mother saying, my son left the country in 1986. I never saw them. Where are they? Tell me what happened to them. That mother didn't want revenge. She wanted the truth. She wanted to know that. She wanted to know that Thabo was in a minibus taxi. The cops stopped. They took him out with his friends. They went and tortured them and killed them. She wants the remains. She wants to have a ceremony at her home to say, my son is back. Here he is. I know. That's all many, many of those people wanted. They didn't want anymore. So Thabo's mother can't do that right now. And there are hundreds and maybe thousands of mothers and fathers and relatives and girlfriends and all kinds of people who now don't know. So
let's go then to the top secret document. I mean, how the hell do you get your hands onto something?
I can't tell you that. It's a top secret. I can tell you this. I found that document because one of the 22 people in that room took a document home with them. And they took it home and one of the cabinet members, they took it home when you are supposed to hand it back so that it's archived and destroyed and so forth. He took it home. There were no women in the room of 22 men. They were all gray men in white shirts and ties, and they all looked the same. They all went to the same school, went to the same university, spoke the same language, and they were not diverse.
Cyril Ramaphosa was not in this meeting.
Not at all. This is why we need archives, because right now any Tom, Dick, and Johnny and Thabo and Peter can pitch up and say, yeah, you know, Rems was a spy. And you say, where's the evidence? Oh, no, yeah, you can see him. Look at his face. You can see him. You know, this one. So if we had those archives, we'd have proper information about, yeah, you know, so-and-so is this and so is this. And that's why if you think about the Germans, and you spoke a bit about the Soviets, if you think about the Germans and the Cold War, there are all these files from East Germany, which show that Rems's neighbor was listening in and was reporting to the Stasi, the intelligence agency, that okay, they have sex once a week and they seem to be having lots of meat in that house. Where's the money coming from? There must be spies for so-and-so or whatever and so forth and so forth. We don't have all that because all these files were destroyed. So anyway, someone took that document home. They died. Their family took put their documents out. And this document was among some of those documents. And I thankfully managed to
pretty much all of these 21 guys are dead. I mean, Flock just died the other day. So which one of them? You can't defame a dead man. The law says.
No, you can't defame a dead man. You can't defame a dead man. But I'm going to put all my documents, by the way. I'm going to hand them over to the university. The University of Johannesburg. Because some other people have done the same thing. So there's a growing number of documents that are around, how shall I say, around Chris Hani and his murder. So I will put my documents in there as well, so that in future people like you and researchers and young people, and I know there are many of them listening to this podcast, can go and rebuild and build on the story that I've told and others have told, and we get a better and better idea of what happened in that time. Anyone can have a look at these documents.
Many, many people died at the hands of the apartheid government. That state security council was just a murderer.
I agree with you.
Why was Hani's murder different from others? Why did it become such a big thing? Was he feared so much by these gray guys in gray suits and white shirts, who all smoked, by the way?
And Chris Hani was special in many ways. You know, they tried to kill Chris Hani many times before. There's the story of his driver in Lesotho when he, in 1982, I think, they arrested the guy, they beat him up, they tortured him, they turned him, and then they sent him back to Maseru, for him to kill Chris Hani. He placed a bomb in the car, and the bomb didn't go off. They raided the building where he lived and killed something like 19 people. Unfortunately for them, Chris Hani was not at home that day. His children and his wife were there. Thankfully, they escaped, but others were killed.
I'm going to keep on interrupting you because, you see, unlike these smart people who do long podcasts, I don't do mine very long, so I want to get to this very quickly. So,
absolutely.
Let's go back to the 14th. I mean, in this room, you say that, you know, de Klerk was relieved that Adrian Flock's replacement, Hernas Krill, was on an official visit to Europe. I don't know who they were. I mean, these guys were even visiting Europe. They were crazy. But anyway, that's not the point. Point is that he was not in this meeting. It sounds to me that at this point, that the Nets were actually terrified of the ANC, that they wouldn't even want their own, who are terrible, to be in the room.
I think some of them, F.W. de Klerk certainly knew that in his cabinet there were guys who would give him a hard time, like, you're a sellout and so forth. Hernas Krill was one of those guys. He was a hard smoking, very hard drinking, very right wing kind of guy who essentially thought de Klerk is giving the country away to the blacks. That this guy was just not, should not be leader. He actually didn't believe FW should be the leader of the National Party at that time. So de Klerk wanted a deal, but not everyone in that room, not everyone in his cabinet wanted a deal. In fact, many people would have said at that point, that cabinet, some in that cabinet wanted the negotiations to go on endlessly, for the ANC to be accused of being involved in black-on-black violence, as they called it, despite the fact that it was being fomented by apartheid intelligence operatives, like the guy who's been exposed has been the guy who wrote the Reuters intelligence reports. Those kinds of people were behind that violence. We know now, since the 90s, that in fact, all that stuff about violence between the ANC and Inkatha and so forth, it was payments from slush funds to the IFPs, people like Temba Khoza and others, to foment this violence that led to Sebuke massacre, Wipato massacre, and so forth and so forth. So that was the scenario. It wasn't everyone in that cabinet who wanted this to happen. They were playing games, deadly games, with people's lives to prolong their stay in power.
It would seem, however important this meeting was on the 14th, that actually the saving hand was that of Nelson Mandela, as you spoke about him, that he then spoke, you know, a few days later and everybody listened. Is that true, or was his hand slightly exaggerated on this matter?
No, you know, I So there are two things. I'd like to say something here. You know, right now, this year, in the UK, for example, if you talk to the people in the UK about what happened in the Second World War, they'll tell you, we were lucky, we had leadership. Winston Churchill stood up to Hitler. He encouraged the nation. He gave speeches. If you say, who's the hero of World War II? They won't say, oh, you know, it's those Africans who came to help and fought in the war that they didn't really have a hand in. It's not even the Americans who came and rescued the Europeans and so forth. It's Churchill. There must be, just in the first 3 months of this year, in the first 4 months of this year, there must be at least 20 books that have been published about Winston Churchill. And I want to make this distinction for our listeners, and for South Africa, and for Black South Africans in particular. Why is it we don't have heroes in South Africa? When you say Shaka was a great war general, he could command thousands of men, and he could defeat the Matswana and the Beni and build an empire that stretched into Botswana. And
he needed a television series while he was doing this stuff, right? I mean, he was such...
Exactly. He had camera people with him. But my point is, we don't have heroes in South Africa. Why? What's going on? So Nelson Mandela, if you start the conversation about how incredible, what an amazing leader he was, it's, but he was a spy. That one, he worked for the CIA. That one. So I want to be unashamed about this. I wanted to write a book that celebrates Nelson Mandela, that says this guy was the guy. Because I believe he was. And I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to be judged by history. And when the history is reported on, that on Twitter, they said Mandela was a spy, Mandela was a sellout. I'm staking my claim. Nelson Mandela was an incredible and amazing leader. And in that week, I see elements of amazing, incredible, great leadership from him. So the other thing that I do in the book is to show him as a human being. So there are elements, there are parts in the book. People should read it. By the way, it's called The Plot to Save South Africa. I know, Rems, you're not going to say the name of my book, so I'm going to finish myself.
Quickly, what does he say before I ask you the last two questions?
Okay, so Nelson Mandela recognized that his first speech was a complete, absolute dud. So he wrote the speech himself, and that was the great speech that he gave on the Tuesday evening after the murder of Chris Hani, in which he said, a white man full of hate came to our country and tried to and killed our beloved son. Then he said, a white woman saw this terrible killing, and she called the police. So don't believe this whole stuff that, oh, black and white and so forth. It was a white man who was full of hate who killed our black leader. It was a white woman who saw it and reported it and took the sting out of those who wanted to make this a black-white, blacks must fight whites and so forth. He knew what he wanted. He wanted to do that.
My friends in red overalls will tell you that that is exactly the reason Hitler never took responsibility for the killing of Hani.
You know, I think one of the things that we must do is say, for me, it's what is your book, Justice? My book my book is not too thick, but actually, if you get into it, and I'd like to say this to all our friends who like to make allegations about people without reading, and I'm a big emphasis on this. Half of that book, not half, but you know, a quarter of that of those. All those pages in the book are actually references, because I would like people to say Mandela was a spy and here's the evidence. Because one of the things that we do in South Africa that you and I need to start telling people,
I'm certainly, what's the evidence for that? Because people like to say, yeah, Cyril Ramaphosa is a CIA spy. And it's, where's the evidence for that? Show me the evidence. Because if you're going to go to university, you and I, you know, we certainly don't have a great education, but we have a little bit. But the thing is that your professor, anyone, you will say, dromedaries arrived in Cape Town in 1652. The first question is, how do you know that? Well, there were no pictures. There were no, well, the journals of the Van Riebeeck, whatever. The evidence-based argument is what we need. And a lot of this stuff has no. So I'd like to say, anyone, every line in my book has a reference. And the references are at the back of the book. And that's why, this is why I it was hard to write this book, but it was delicious because everything is evidence based. So a lot of people will say, oh yeah, but that one was this and so, and you say, show me under your skirt.
It's not the Justice Malala. This meeting of the 14th of April in 1993. And of course, the intervention of Mandela, in your argument, saved us from catastrophe and got us to what we're celebrating today.
Yes. So in that meeting, the ANC, after Chris Hani's murder, said, we're not playing around here. We want two things. We want a transitional executive council. A transitional executive council for the young people out there was a body that would oversee the elections. So imagine, the FW de Klerk and the National Party wanted to say, oh, we'll organize the elections. They wanted to be a referee and a player in this thing. And the ANC and others said, no. There must be a TEC, transitional executive, that would essentially be the cabinet over the months before the election, so that everyone is a player and that TEC is the referee. In that meeting, FW de Klerk and his people said, yes, okay, we'll have a TEC. That was the first major concession that the National Party will, for a time, not be in power in South Africa. And in December that year, the TEC came along. They also agreed that we'll agree to an election date. And on the 3rd of June, direct from that meeting of that Wednesday, April 27 was agreed to be the election day that we are celebrating today, and we'll celebrate 30 years off next year.
And thus, as the EFF will tell you, was where the sellout settlement came from. Justice Malala, wonderful chatting to you, my brother. It's been a minute, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much, Rams. I really appreciate you having me, and I wish we'd had more laughs. There are some laughs in the book. There is a beautiful part. I'm not sure if you got to it. Nelson Mandela goes to I have to go. But there's one line. Nelson Mandela comes back from a rally, and he wants to have a lunch. He's hungry, and he can't find anywhere to eat, and ends up at the Carlton Center in the hotel by himself with this young American guy eating all by himself. And you think, wow, man, I mean, if they'd wanted to take him out, they could have done it right there. So, yeah.
And from there,
thank you.
From there, the book Is Our Time to Eat was written. Please grab Justice Malala's book, The Plot to Save South Africa, at all credible bookstores. And that concludes this long edition of Taking the Rams by the Horns. Happy Freedom Day to all of you. Remember to download the New Sowetan app and follow us on Twitter at Rams by the Horns and at Sowetan Live. Monday is Workers' Day, right? Remember that. It's Workers' Day. But it's also my birthday, so I'm taking time off. You won't hear me. That is in recognition of the rights of the workers. Boss, I hope you hear that. I'm not coming. From me, Rams Mavote, goodbye and God bless.